Hi.
Anna, this is in the gallery that's known as the Memento Mori Gallery. It's about death and mourning and loss and grief. Can you tell us how your exhibition relates to that theme?
Yeah, certainly. I started off interrogating the collection from the idea of ghost objects, which is essentially what I have always referred to the pieces that I make in slip casting as small ghost objects or remembering of other objects. But within the research and quite early on in this project, my father passed away and my mum gave me his last bar of soap and a stack of hankies that were his. And I held on to the objects and it just made sense for me to then interrogate the collection from this idea of, I guess, another layer of ghosts within that. So I began exploring the objects that are with us or have been with us through the centuries in the ritual of death and passing and people moving on into the other life.
We don't have many rituals in Western society around death, do we? We have the funeral and not a lot else, but that's very different in other cultures.
Yeah, certainly. And I think that's what I felt when I walked into the studio and, you know, you write a eulogy and you remember someone and then there's sort of very little else, particularly if you don't have any particular religious leaning. And so you're sort of left making sense of this with very little ritual around it. So I became quite interested in the various cultures and the rituals around mourning and grieving and what has happened for centuries past. And ceramics, I suppose, has been with us, you know, since time immemorial. And we, as you know, it's such a humble, democratic material that we have used, you know, it does tiles, it's industrial purposes, but it's also been with us at times of ritual, you know, for cremation. And so there are certain objects within the collection that I was drawn to from that perspective.
Mm. I'd like to talk about what we've got exhibited here, and it should be made clear, I guess, to people that are coming along to the gallery that it's not sitting on its own as an exhibition. It is placed within the other items in this gallery. Were you given any opportunity to choose where it was to be placed?
There were certainly conversations around that, and that sort of became more apparent as we got to the pointier end of me pulling out the objects and making the work. And there was a couple of spaces, but this room really did, it felt like it spoke to the work, even though there's this particular heaviness or darkness to that. I felt that it was really important to also have the work sort of quietly interdispersed amongst the collection to kind of really hold on to the spirit of what the collection's project is, which is pulling out these pieces from the collection and having conversations and giving different readings and understandings and narratives for them, I think.
Anna, let's start with the handkerchiefs on the wall. Now, you're a ceramicist, yet they look so beautifully preserved as if they are the handkerchief. Can you tell us about the process of slip casting and what's involved in it?
Yeah, certainly, Deb. The handkerchiefs are actually not traditionally slip cast in the industrial making term, but they're actually dipped in porcelain slip. So slip is it's a particular recipe of water, clay and a flocculant, which essentially just makes the particles all hang and suspend within the water. So you dip the handkerchief into the slip and fold it, you know, how you want it to be shaped. And then when it fires, the handkerchief burns out, sort of almost like a cremation, I guess. So you're left with this remembering, this clay that remembers the original object. And the hankies were all donated. I put out a call out and friends and family and colleagues from sort of widely around Australia and overseas as well sent handkerchiefs, which was beautiful, and also sent me the stories that went with these gorgeous objects, because a lot of them were very sentimental for people as well. So it was, I guess, exploring this idea of contemporary objects collecting tears and memorialising nostalgic objects as well.
Are your father's handkerchiefs amongst those on the walls?
Yeah, I did sacrifice a couple of his for that. I thought that was really important for me, for the integrity of that piece. But yeah, you know, I certainly couldn't let go of all of them. I'm, you know, not quite ready for that yet. But there are some lovely ones in there from people's rememberings. Like one, someone's grandma who had learnt how to crochet on the ship from out from England, being taught by a suffragette at the time. So she, you know, gained her skills in that. So there was, yeah, I think surprisingly that is the really beautiful thing, the stories that people share from these connections that they have with these really humble objects, which is, you know, a joy.
but they're objects that we use each day, so they've got that direct connection to the person. And in a way, not only are you looking at the whole issue of loss as a theme, but the person that gives you that handkerchief is losing it again, so they're losing that connection to that person.
Yeah, and I do sort of take the responsibility of those objects and those stories, and I hope that in kind of permanently memorialising them in porcelain, that there is, you know, this other life that this object has, I suppose.
Well, that's right. Ironically, the work itself is going to be more long-lasting and robust than the item which you are memorialising in it. If we look at the soaps, I just particularly love them. They're cast, they look like bars of white soap, but they have this beautiful gold gilt in them. Can you tell us about that process? I understand it's from a Japanese art of repair.
Yeah, indeed. So there's a beautiful tea bowl that's been recently acquired in the collection, that's one of the few that has, you know, officially been named in an Australian collection as well. And kintsugi as a process, which is to mend with lacquer and gold. So it's this lovely idea of when something, to give life to an object that has been broken and repaired the cracks. So you're holding within that one object its former self, its broken self, the story of that, and its new kind of rebirth. So for me, I was looking at the soaps, exploring this idea of repair and attention and care by kind of filling the cracks with gold luster. Yeah, so it's sort of riffing on that idea as opposed to repair itself, but these kind of small wounds. And when I was researching, there was this beautiful Japanese word called kamakizu. It is a word for kiln wounds, which, as someone who does ceramics, you know, when you're always pushing up against it and opening a kiln to a great number of kiln wounds at times and heartache, it really sort of captivated my imagination, I suppose, that there is this word for that. Yeah, and so one of the bars of soap is actually my father's last bar of soap that he, I guess, was using when he passed away. And that did take me quite a long time to make a mould of, because often within the mould-making process, the original object can end up destroyed. So I really left that quite to the last, yeah.
Do you know, by looking up at the work, which bar that is?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's quite a number of soaps, because a lot of those have also been donated over the years by people. I can look at a lot of them and know who they were from. I've got it all documented on file at home with who donated and when.
In the centre of the gallery, there are beautiful ceramic buckets filled with a sort of translucent film. Are they representing literally buckets of tears?
So that piece is called All the Tears I Cried. And certainly with making this work, I guess I was exploring those ideas of tears. There was also another object, this small Roman glass flask from the, second century AD, and I think it's one of the oldest pieces in the collection. And once upon a time, objects of that kind were found in great number in Roman and Greek and Hebrew tombs, and they were thought for a really long time to be objects that held the tears of the mourners and were buried with the dead, and they were called lacrimatories, and they're such a beautiful, beautiful story. Mm. In more recent times, I couldn't give you the date. This has sort of all been, proven incorrect by science, and, you know, they've tested it and it's just oils. But it really, again, it was this kind of exploring this idea of contemporary tear catching. You know, that song of Bob Dylan, Buckets of Rain, Buckets of Tears, you know, kind of came to mind. But then I was also thinking, you know, how many tears do you cry in a lifetime? And so apparently it's sort of like, I don't know who crunches these numbers, but 61.5 leaders in your lifetime. And, you know, strangely enough, or ironically enough, making a work about the number of tears you'll cry in a lifetime did sort of open up, it invited in that, I guess. I've had quite a large number of technical hiccups, and it was a really challenging piece.
So tears of grief over not just your father and others that you've lost, but the work itself. If only we could mend your kiln wounds with gilt, Honor, wouldn't that be wonderful? My special guest at the Art Gallery of South Australia is Honor Freeman. The work that we're talking about is Ghost Objects. It's part of the Sala Festival, South Australian Living Artist Festival. It's in the Memento Mori Gallery of the Art Gallery. One of the pieces that I think is most eye-catching and confusing to me is Shape of Remembering, which looks like someone's come in and, by mistake, have left their tea towel or their small hand towel folded up, except that you can see that thin line of gold through it. Can you tell us about that work?
So it's a folded towel that has been slip cast, and I guess the towels are sort of objects of care, or this idea of folding and, you know, yeah, an object of care. And I liked that this was an opportunity to place this object sort of fairly quietly. And I guess it harks back to earlier work of quietly kind of placing works around, and a gentle nod to those that, you know, it's sort of a reward for those who notice the small things, because it could very easily be overlooked. But in this context, it's sort of in front of this really large painting. It's kind of a still life of a, you know, a hunting scene of, you know, animals who are no longer alive. And there's sort of this relationship. There's a floor rug that's sort of pushed up in the corner and creased, sort of, you know, ties in nicely with the towel. And also you sort of, you know, there's blood on the floor. There's this relationship with the towel that's just nice, and the gold gilt frame with the seam of gold in the towel, which I think is just a nice play on sort of showing up the object for what it is, or bringing into question, is this, you know, is it fabric? What is this? Yeah.
Anna, it's an amazing exhibition. It's something that you really need to take your time to look at and to immerse yourself within. Has the process of creating the exhibition itself helped you with your own grief regarding your father?
I think strangely being in the studio and making, and repetition within a crafting process and finding those rhythms is a really lovely way of making sense of things that you don't always have the words for. So that quiet space of the studio, it did offer that space to reflect and make sense of grief, I think, in a way that maybe we don't always give ourselves the space or time for. So it was at times challenging, I think, as well, to reflect on something so intensely regularly, but I loved it, and it's great to sort of finally see it all come together in this space.
Well, I think in times of loss, we often look at the small things that people have left behind, the sort of mundane everyday items, and you've given them great value and worth by putting them in this exhibition. I'm very sorry for your loss, but I'm sure if your dad is looking down on you now, he'd be very, very proud of your work. Are you a bit of a chip off the old block?
I probably actually am. If, you know, my family were standing here to, like, pull me up on what I was going to say, they would be like, yes, you are. Yeah.